Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
By the way, on the Leonard Lopate show today at noon, the Please Explain series looks at weeds. So Leonard should probably know that Jason on our Facebook page just wrote in, "It's so hot, even my weeds are dying." So Leonard, take that up in Please Explain today. Now, rarely has there been so much buzz over the departure of someone you probably never heard of. But while you may not know the name of the head of the MTA, the sudden resignation of Jay Walder after just 2 years is coming as a shock and a disappointment to New York officials and mass transit advocates alike. Here to talk about that and more is Sam Schwartz, a.k.a. Gridlock Sam in the Daily News, a former New York City traffic commissioner. We'll also talk about Easy Pass discounts becoming less easy to get in the tri-state area, city drivers' new favorite bridges, and the 100th anniversary this week of the end of East River tolls, just as some people want to bring them back. What goes across the river usually comes back, even if it takes a century. WNYC Transportation Nation Director Andrea Bernstein also with us. So hello, Sam Schwartz. Hello, Andrea Bernstein.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, if you could put on your Gridlock Sam hat, does a 100-degree day make gridlock any more likely?
Absolutely. What happens is some of the cars get weeded out, talking about weeds earlier, and they break down on the highways, and it means a greater probability of gridlock. So, yes.
And people may actually be heading for their cars in some cases if they have good air conditioning, better than wherever else they may be. Any tips for driving in this heat?
I would say on days like today, try to drive in the early morning, in the late evening. The rush hours is stop and go. Unless your car is in good shape, don't even venture out to places like the Holland Tunnel, the Midtown Tunnel, or the Queensborough Bridge.
Andrea J. Walder, respected by the establishment and alternative energy advocates alike, leaving after 2 years as head of the MTA to take a much better paying job as head of the private company that runs the transit system in Hong Kong. One way he made his mark in 2 short years was getting those subway countdown clocks installed in about 150 stations. Why else is he so respected?
Well, you know, it's a complicated thing. I mean, you know, sometimes people just sort of want a steady hand at the till. But Jay Walder is really seen by most people, with the notable exception of the Transport Workers Union, and I'll explain that in a moment. But he's seen by most people as somebody who really cares about transportation. When you think of who has been the head of the MTA in the past, it's been real estate developers, it's been political fundraisers. It hasn't necessarily been people who come from the transportation world. And Jay Walder did. He came from London. He had a top job in London's transportation system. And he came here wanting to really improve the system. Now, he also came at just a really excruciating time for the MTA. We were talking about bridge tolls, and former Governor David Paterson was trying to get those passed, you may remember, to help fund the MTA. And
right.
That did not happen. They didn't pass the state legislature. So, you know, a lot of people sort of, you know, blame the MTA, but really the MTA has a funding crisis. And Walder came, the first thing he had to do was close an $800 million budget gap, which is larger than the budget of just about every other transit agency in the United States. Just what he had to close.
Right. And the Daily News lead editorial today, Sam, credits Walder with smartly cutting, for example, billions by trimming staff and contracts, and for instituting, in the face of all of this, a rational fare increase system that would see fares go up no more than every other year and limited to the rate of inflation. All good stuff?
Well, that's definitely good stuff. Whether or not that promise of keeping pace with inflation remains to be seen. It's unlikely, in my estimation, that we'll be able to see that considering the current funding sources. We're in trouble when it comes to the transit system. We're either going to be raising revenues, introducing some type of pricing system, some additional taxes, or what we hate to see are service cuts.
And we should note, as the temperature climbs toward 100 degrees, that the Daily News credits him today with making sure the air conditioning works more reliably in the subways. But, Andrea, what was this about the actual rank and file? workers for the MTA not being in love with Jay Walden?
He's had a bitter battle with the unions. I mean, there have been layoffs. I think probably the most high profile was when the station agents were booted. And there is incredible animosity towards him for sort of, you know, the transport workers union perception of Jay Walden is that he's this sort of fat cat presiding over this system. And they put out a statement yesterday essentially saying, good riddance. Now, what is interesting is that, you know, that is sort of an outlier of opinion, that you don't normally get groups like Transportation Alternatives and the New York City Business Partnership and lots of sort of real estate developers at the same time saying, yes, we really like this guy. And,
right,
you know, partly it was for the sort of technology, the sense of, you know, even in times of cutbacks, there are things that the authority can do to make the experience of taking the train better, if not faster.
What did he make as head of the MTA, and what will he make running the Hong Kong trains?
Well, we don't know exactly what he's going to make, although everybody that I spoke to yesterday told me that he told them, everybody who spoke to him, that, you know, basically he wasn't looking to leave, but he'd been made an offer he couldn't refuse. He's going to be the CEO of a large and expanding rail company, which also operates transit systems, and is also a real estate developer.
Oh.
So in Hong Kong, the
MTA owns a lot of real estate.
They do, but it's different because, for example, I mean, an analogy would be if the MTA was developing Hudson Yards and was going to get all of the revenue from that and then could plow it back into the transit system. That's how it works in Hong Kong. And as a result, they're flush, which is obviously the opposite of the MTA.
What did he make at the MTA? Do you know that?
He made $350,000, and he also had this promise that if he was pushed out before 6 years because of all the uncertainty about Governor Patterson and who would succeed him, that he would get another $350,000, diminishing over the years,
uh-huh,
if he were asked to leave before the end of his six-year term.
And so something more than probably $600,000 or $700,000 is what he's being paid by this company in Hong Kong. How's his Chinese? Do you know?
I don't know how his Chinese is. I mean, I do know that he lived in Singapore.
Oh.
And he worked in Singapore.
Uh-huh.
I also know that this must have been a, you know, wrenching decision. He's got high school age and school age children, who he is, you know, just moved here from London. So there, his family will be moving yet again, a very long ways away.
Do you think, Sam Schwartz, that there's anything to learn from the Hong Kong model in that a private contractor runs the rails there rather than a government agency?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it's a government agency, keeping the real estate as part of the transportation formula. Most of our rail systems, even here in New York City, were real estate companies that built transit systems to get to the real estate they developed. And then the mistake was those transit systems giving up that real estate portion. So it's a terrific model, and it's one we should be looking at, although we don't necessarily have to privatize. We ought to keep some of the real estate that the MTA has and look at opportunities to develop it.
Like what Andrea was referring to, the Hudson Yards site on the far west side.
The Hudson Yards, you've got the Atlantic Yards going up over the rail facilities. You have a lot of tunnels that have air rights. So there really is a lot of real estate. The next time there's a boom, the MTA should really get into the game.
So it would be helping mass transit in New York City if the Atlantic Yard site had not been, what was it, sold or leased, I forget, to the developer Bruce Ratner to develop that controversial project?
Sure. If it were kept in the family of the MTA and the MTA could lease it out, the MTA could have had a dedicated revenue stream from that.
Do you agree, Andrea? Because I thought they crunched the numbers and decided that their best option was to sell it and get the one-time windfall.
Well, you know, this is sort of an eternal debate. I will say that internationally, the Hong Kong model is the sort of model that everybody's looking towards because everybody is asking themselves in times of economic, you know, global economic crisis, how do you fund transit? This is not a sort of unique to New York or even unique to the U.S. experience.
It's almost like a public-private hybrid, that if they have the private money-generating business, which would be the real estate business, and use the profits to sink in to the money sinkhole, which is operating mass transit, which I don't know if anybody could do at a profit in and of itself, then it becomes a hybrid in that sense, right?
Yes, and I think it's one that works. It works in Hong Kong, and I think we can make it work here in New York City.
Interesting. All right, gridlock, Sam. Let's move on to some other matters, like a new report that shows more drivers into and out of Manhattan are going bridge shopping. Do you have a bridge you want to sell me?
Well, I've got four bridges I want to sell you, and they're the four East River bridges. And what is happening is people with the tough economy are now hopping off the Long Island Expressway in greater numbers than ever before at Van Dam Street and using the Queensboro Bridge. The same thing, hopping off the BQE and using the Manhattan Bridge or the Brooklyn Bridge or the Williamsburg Bridge, because we have toll facilities right adjacent to them. So we have this crazy pricing system that encourages people to drive out of their way and cause more congestion.
By the way, we just got word that the Wall Street Journal reports that the departing chief of MTR, the Hong Kong Rail Company, made a salary last year of $1.78 million in U.S. dollars, not including stock option grants and other things, according to company filings. So that's
it's a big job.
Triple the salary at least that Jay Walder was going to make at the MTA. Some stats on these bridge shopping drivers. The Brooklyn Battery Tunnel took the biggest hit, according to the New York Post, losing 4,300 of its customers, or 8%, during the financially perilous one-year period. The Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Williamsburg bridges added a total of 4,200 vehicles to their annual count, nearly the same number that abandoned the Battery Tunnel. Similar trend was evident at the tolled Henry Hudson Bridge, where the traffic was down by 3.6%, or 2,500 vehicles. The alternative that's free, the Broadway Bridge, saw a corresponding jump of 2,300. So I guess this is just common sense, Sam. People are poorer, so they'll spend extra time and extra aggravation to save money.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, those numbers are not annual. Those were the daily numbers based on an annual study.
Uh-huh.
People are doing that. And we have a pricing scheme that goes back to, 70, 80 years ago when Robert Moses set tolls at the TBTA facilities. And 100 years ago when Mayor William Gaynor this week removed tolls from the four East River bridges. What we have is a cockamamie pricing scheme. It makes no sense that we told people to go from Queens to Queens across the Cross Bay Boulevard Bridge, and we don't toll people to go from Queens to Midtown Manhattan across the Queensboro Bridge. We have tolls in the wrong places.
So you're for the congestion pricing or tolling the East River bridges. On the other hand, if people are in toll avoidance mode, maybe they just stop wanting to come in and out altogether.
Yeah, that hasn't been demonstrated. Everybody from New Jersey, if they want to drive, has to pay a toll. The Hudson River is completely tolled. We've seen no reductions as a result of that.
It was Mayor William Gaynor who lifted the tolls on the East River bridges in 1911, as we mark that 100th anniversary this week, because the 10 cents was too much to bear in 1911. But aren't tolls regressive taxation? Mayor Dinkins, when he was in office, was against tolling the East River bridges because he said they hurt the working class outer borough folks who might have to drive for a living or who don't have good public transportation to drive to work in Manhattan, to get to work in Manhattan, whereas it benefits Manhattanites who tend to be wealthier.
No, it's just the opposite. What I'm recommending is a fair pricing scheme. Take it off the Verrazano Bridge or reduce the Verrazano Bridge by $5. The Gil Hodges Bridge. Everybody that goes between the Bronx and Queens has to pay a toll. Take those tolls and reduce them by $5. That's where your working class is. The average driver into Manhattan has to pay an enormous amount for parking. These are not poor people that are driving in during the business day. Sure, at night, maybe lower the tolls, have pricing by time of day.
Also, I mean, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that, some 90% of people who work in Manhattan are taking transit? It's not, I mean, a lot of people are not driving to Manhattan for work. Now, some people do have to. This is a sort of a national anomaly. If you want to cross the San Francisco Bay, you don't, get to choose to save money by taking the San Mateo Bridge instead of the Bay Bridge.
Right. One more thing before we run out of time. I said we would get to this change in the Easy Pass discount rules. Are you on this, Andrea? This affects mostly New Jersey?
the easy pound. Well, this is something that's been building for a while, that, you know, it's been sort of one of those budget cuts things that's been sort of slipping away. And the thinking behind it is that people needed to be encouraged to use Easy Pass in the first place. But now that they're using it, they don't need the extra inducement.
Sam, it's getting less easy to get Easy Pass discounts for some drivers in our area. It's if you live in New Jersey, now you have to buy your Easy Pass in New Jersey in order to get the off-peak discounts on the Jersey roads. Is that the thing?
Yeah, there's a border war going on, and it started here in New York. The MTA stopped giving discounts to New Jersey Easy Pass. Uh-huh. Now New Jersey Easy Pass is not giving discounts to New York Easy Pass. That's all silly. We should have one pricing scheme.
And as Andrea says, I guess it's a way of raising more revenue without saying you're raising the tolls.
And surprising a lot of people when they get their bills.
Yes. And these discounts are pretty big. Let's see, a full dollar less every time you cross some of the MTA bridges within the city. $1.86 off the $11 Verrazano Narrows Bridge. If you drive the full length of the New Jersey Turnpike, it's $9.05 in cash, or $6.80 with Easy Pass during off-peak hours. So this is really going to add up.
Brian, some of your numbers are a little old. They've raised the Verrazano Bridge to $13.
Oh, right. I missed that one.
So
and we have to leave it there with Sam Schwartz, head of Sam Schwartz Engineering, a.k.a. Gridlock Sam, in the Daily News, former New York City Traffic Commissioner, and Andrea Bernstein. I'm guessing that people could read about some of these things.
All of this.
At transportationnation.org.
You guess right.
Thank you both. Brian Lehrer and WNYC.